Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg made the rounds on Capitol Hill Thursday as he looks to patch things up with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. Facebook is just one of the Silicon Valley tech giants accused of becoming too big, snuffing out competition, and stifling innovation along the way. Facebook, in particular, has also been under scrutiny for data breaches, sharing personal data without users' consent to political consultants, while not doing enough to scrub hate speech and misinformation from its platform.
Conflicting fortunes Thursday for Ryanair staff and the Ryanair boss. Europe's largest budget airline says it plans to cut as many as 700 positions. Some could go at the Dublin headquarters. At least some will be compulsory redundancies. It's a different story, though, for high-profile boss Michael O'Leary. On Thursday, Ryanair shareholders narrowly approved a bonus scheme that could see him pocket 100 million euros over 5 years.
ECB, BOJ, BOE. The last week has been an alphabet soup of central bankers, though for markets, it's the numbers that matter, especially if it's the Fed. A 0.25% rate cut from the US Central Bank on Wednesday was expected. What wasn't expected was the slightly less dovish tone from Chief Jerome Powell. The Bank of Japan signalled more stimulus could come as early as next month, but on Thursday kept policy on hold even so.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is the 20th of September, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day getting underway here. Lots to cover this morning in the program. We'll try to get to as much of it as possible. With us today is Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management, where he's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager. We have Paul for the whole hour today, so we'll get to Paul and talk a little bit about the economy and our portfolios. We'll even take some of your portfolio and money questions as well this morning as we move through the program, so stay tuned for that. We will also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic through the hour here on 720 WGN. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, with futures pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up nearly 55 points, nearly 0.25% this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up each 0.25% as well. The market day in Asia has ended generally in the green. Hong Kong, the only of the lower there in the Asian stocks. The Nikkei ending the day up nearly 0.25% in Japan. In China, up by nearly 0.25% as well. In Europe, markets are generally in the green as well. In London, up just barely into the green. The FTSE is just up a point this morning. In Germany and France, up fractionally as well. And in the U.S., oil is at $58.77 a barrel, which is up about 62 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. It's day five of the General Motors strike. Nearly 50,000 workers with the United Auto Workers walked off the job earlier this week, mainly over health benefits and wages. While the two sides are seeing are agreeing on a new four-year contract, the many issues still unresolved. They're eyeing a four-year contract. Union officials say progress is being made at the negotiating table. You heard Vic talking about this in the news at 5 o'clock. 2,000 nurses at the University of Chicago Medical Center set to go on a one-day strike later this morning. Contract negotiations with the nurses broke down late Wednesday. And Airbnb will soon be going public. The home rentals giant confirmed in a statement that it expects to become a publicly traded company sometime next year. No other details are being released on Airbnb's initial public offering. The company did announce this week, though, that it took in substantially more than $1 billion in revenue so far in 2019. The host and guest network has more than 7 million listings in over 100,000 cities. Let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Steve.
Have you ever stayed at an Airbnb?
I have not. My wife has and had a pretty good experience with it. And it's always a little, it's different depending on who you're dealing with, as whoever owns the place. But overall experience is pretty good.
Yeah, they have a new thing, too, that I've tried recently, the Airbnb experiences, where you go to a place and somebody in that city who has the knowledge kind of guides you around. And
it's okay.
You pay like a fee for that.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool, too. Airbnb going public, you going to invest?
No. No, I can say that with very certainty. Because, again, for us, it's not so much the revenue, and you highlighted the top-line revenue number for them, but it's going to be profitability. Mm-hmm. You know, how profitable are they? And you know, what are they looking to do next? And how do they go about expanding? And we've seen it now with WeWork. We saw it with many of the other public offerings that we've had recently, Lyft and mm-hmm. Uber the same way. The profits just are not there. The revenue numbers look wonderful, but they're not making money.
Right.
And we prefer to invest in companies that have an established track record of making money.
Yeah, you've said before that your rule is no IPOs.
No IPOs. No, we'd like to see the dust settle. We'd like to see them operate as a public company. Because the rules are different between a private company and a public company. The SEC is involved. You have filing requirements, et cetera. You got to come before the shareholders every quarter. So it's just a different environment. And some companies do a very good job of that. Others really struggle with it, especially as you have an entrepreneur CEO that started the company. And now you have to put on a completely different outfit, not just a hat, but a completely different outfit as far as dealing with Wall Street and shareholders, et cetera, than you did when you were starting the company as an entrepreneur.
Has the dust settled yet after the Federal Reserve announcement this week?
I think so. I think, you know, I joke in the office and say, you know, when we get to Fed Day, it's kind of a beer and popcorn day.
Right.
Don't bother trading. Just sit back and watch and listen. Because the knee-jerk reaction is either positive or negative, and then the next day kind of unwinds that initial knee-jerk reaction, and it usually takes about 2 days before the market settle down, and I think that's what we're seeing now. The market sold off probably 200 points or so as he was going to the press conference because there was more of a hawkish tone, and you highlighted it in the news at the beginning. There was a little bit more of a hawkish tone to what he was talking about as far as maybe, you know, the economy looks okay. Maybe we're not going to cut rates as quickly as everybody thinks, or at least that was the implication. Mm-hmm. But then as they went further into the Q&A part of the press conference, he opened the door for, you know, if things are necessary, we will be, you know, we'll be as aggressive as we need to be. And the markets were heartened to hear that it's not hard and fast that, you know, we're going to be cutting rates or we're not going to cut rates at all. And so that is why the markets then recovered, got to unchanged. We were pretty much unchanged yesterday and slightly higher today.
What is the betting for the rest of the year? Another rate cut, or no? Has that gone away now?
No, there's still betting that there's going to be one more rate cut, but it has come back from a rate cut at every meeting. So now there's a pretty high probability they're going to cut one more time this year. But I think if you go back a month or two, they were expecting a quarter point cut at each of the next two meetings. They've walked away from that a little bit. This one was anticipated a month ago to be 50 basis points. The betting was almost 50-50 that was going to occur. So, and again, if you're listening to Powell's comments, you know, he said, you know, the consumer's looking pretty good, housing, employment looking good, the inflation numbers have picked up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not at zero inflation, but we're getting closer to two, and in some cases over two. So there's not the need to be cutting interest rates here.
And the notion, too, that we would get to zero interest rates at some point, he threw a lot of water on that as well.
Right, and certainly negative.
Negative.
That was really the issue that everybody's had. That door, I think, is open because of what other central banks have done. Europe has bought corporate debt. Japan has bought ETFs. They were actually involved in their equity markets. We're not there. We're still buying treasuries, mortgage-backed securities. So we're a lot more restricted in what we're doing as far as the central bank is concerned. But certainly seeing that happening around the world, it lends itself to the ability, at least, or it's not unusual. We're not breaking new ground by doing this, that other central banks are doing it. So whether that happens or not at some point in the future, that door, I think, is wide open.
Paul, there's a question from the 630, kind of dovetailing onto our interest rate conversation. Now a good time to sell or purchase a new home, or should you wait for the next interest rate cut?
Well, assuming we all know when that's going to be, but the problem with the mortgage market is that it's very different than the Fed funds market. So we've talked over the last couple of weeks, the housing market in general has been pretty strong. There's been a fair amount of demand for mortgages, and mortgage rates actually have moved up over the last month, month and a half or so from the bottom that we saw in August. And so really, you know, to be playing that game and say, okay, I'm going to hold off for 2-3 months to buy a house, it very well could be that the house that you want gets purchased away from you, or the price isn't right. They don't accept the offer that you have, or you put your house up for sale and it's too high. You don't get the activity that you think. So to be messing around with, you know, 4.25 versus 4.15 versus 4, I don't think it really makes a lot of sense. If you're in the house and you have a mortgage already, it really doesn't cost much to refinance if you want to do that. So if interest rates do indeed move down, you'd say, well, and I'll just go ahead and refinance and get the lower payments. And I've done that with my house in the last 20 years. I think I've refinanced five different times. Wow. As interest rates have changed and come down and restructure my own debt.
It's definitely worth paying close attention to. Thanks, 630. Paul, this week the Federal Reserve pumped some money into the financial markets, billions of dollars into the financial markets. Should we be concerned about that?
No, the repo market is an interesting market. It is a very different market than it was in 2006 and 2007. You know, we participated as an individual investor at that time. You could participate in that market. In a repo market, a repurchase agreement, and really that's what it is. It can be for overnight. It can be for a week or two. And it's, I need some cash. And so for whatever purposes, I need cash on a short-term basis. I have securities that I can lend as collateral, and that's what they're doing here. And what's happening is there was much more demand for cash than there was collateral and securities for people willing to give you the cash. So as a result of that, if there's a high demand for cash and nobody's really giving it to you, you jump and push up interest rates. And that's what happened in that market. It is back to, quote unquote, normal, functioning normal rates with that Fed injection. Some of it is got to do with the maturity or the issuance of Treasury debt that settled on Wednesday, on Tuesday. Plus, we also had corporate taxes due. So those were two very large amounts that took up a lot of cash and required companies and bank and other financial institutions to demand more cash than there were securities available. So it's a temporary issue, and I think it's a very, very different situation than 2006 or 2007. So we're not concerned about it at this point. And I think the Fed did a pretty good job, and Powell did in his press conference of saying, Don't worry, we're good here. So the financial markets really didn't, they ignored it essentially. You did not see a big move in the equity markets going, oh my gosh, the world's coming to an end, part two.
Right, right. Paul is staying around the whole hour today to talk about our portfolios and the economy and money, and he's taking some of your questions as well. You can either call in or text them in if you'd like at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Paul, I want to go to the 262 area code. Feeling a bit overwhelmed. I just didn't plan well. My 401k is only $50,000. In less than 5 years, I will retire. What can I do at this point? A few credit cards, home, car, managing those well. Thanks for any suggestions.
Yeah, that one's tough, and we do run into it occasionally as well. And that it comes down to saving more. And in a lot of cases, it's difficult because they have the mortgage debt, they have the car, they have all the other obligations. And the environment has changed so much over the last 30 years from pension now to 401k. So now you are responsible for your retirement. And a lot of people don't think about that 401k and funding it properly and trying to put that savings away as aggressively as they probably should. realizing that, oh, retirement is so far in the future. It's another 30 years away or 20 years away. I got plenty of time. And life happens. And then you get to the situation where you're, I'm only about 5-6 years away. And can I say, you know, how do I save more money? And how do I fund it? And really it comes down to, you know, saving more money and really trying to do as much as you can to put dollars away for yourself. Obviously the sooner you get started, the easier it is. Later in life, you're going to really find that you're going to have to put away an awful lot in order to maintain a lifestyle. So then it becomes a lifestyle decision. Mm-hmm. Can I stay where I'm at? Do I need to move, downsize, et cetera, so that I can afford to continue in living in a comfortable manner.
And with 5 years left to retire, from a 401k standpoint, aren't you allowed to contribute more annually in your 401k if you get to a certain age?
In an IRA, in a 401k, you're restricted to 15% of your income. So, you know, there's a maximum amount that you can put in, and that's generally 15% of whatever your salary is. And we've got certainly clients that max out on that, and then they kind of look around and go, okay, well, where can I save additional dollars? And we start talking about a Roth IRA, or we talk about other instruments that people can put additional dollars away for themselves. So it really becomes a lifestyle decision. You know, do I have the lifestyle today, and I'm going to forego that lifestyle in the future because I'm not putting away enough, or do I forego some of that lifestyle today so that I can maintain that lifestyle well into retirement? And sometimes that's a tough decision because you're always being pushed in a lot of different directions of, you know, I'd like to have this today, and foregoing and postponing that the decision to really put away money for yourself in retirement.
Here's another question that sort of goes along with that conversation from the 815, asking about the benefits of reverse mortgages to finance retirement versus investing, maybe using some of that money from the reverse mortgage to maybe invest, save more for retirement, have lived in the house a long time, so no taxes on money from sale. That's an idea, right? To reverse mortgage and invest it.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot more commercials about that.
Yes.
So there's a few high profile actors that are talking about reverse mortgages as though they really need to. In essence, what it is it's titled that describes exactly what it is. Instead of you paying your mortgage, the mortgage company is paying you. Now, it's not an exact reverse in the fact that, okay, my mortgage payment was $1,000. Now I'm going to turn it around and the bank is going to pay me $1,000. But you do get dollars out. What happens, though, is upon the sale of your house, then obviously that gets paid off. The bank is not going to pay you for a $200,000 house. They're not going to pay you $250,000 worth of income over the lifespan because the house is their collateral. They're going to gain that money when you have the sale. So if you're thinking I'm going to pass this on to my beneficiaries or heirs, that's not going to happen. It's something worth pursuing. I do have a couple clients who do have reverse mortgages. They're maybe taking out a couple $100 a month, but it requires a lot of research. It is fairly new. It's been out 15, 20 years. It's getting more acceptance. When it first came out, it was, oh my gosh, the bank's going to take my house. And, you know, that's not the case. But you have to understand what it is that you're going to get out of it. And some people think they're going to get a lot more than what the bank is really willing to give you because they need that collateral of the house as well.
We'll take more of your calls and questions here at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Paul, what do you like here at the end of the week?
You know, it's interesting. You know, we were kind of concerned about what the Fed was going to do and the hawkish talk, if you will, from the Fed. And the trade tariffs are still in the background, and we're still at all-time highs or very close to it in the equity markets. So stocks, I think, have some room to run here, maybe another 3-5% over the next few months. The path of least resistance seems to be higher. interest rates are going to be where they're at. We don't see significantly higher interest rates, maybe a little bit lower. So we haven't really changed the allocation too terribly much. We've done a little bit of rebalancing in accounts where we've taken some money off the equity side, moved it to fixed income as the markets have rebounded from some of the August lows. But we really haven't adjusted and really made huge changes in portfolios. We still like large U.S. That has really been the place to be, certainly over the last 10 years and even again this year. We still have some international money. We still have a little bit more on the value side versus growth, but still very much dominated by the S&P 500, which has been a very good place to be hanging out over the last couple of years.
Let's go to another text from the 217. This is an ag farm question. Again, pull out your crystal ball on this one, Paul. What is your forward-looking opinion, maybe 10 to 20 years, for income-producing farm land, farm ground?
That one's kind of tough. And certainly, the easy answer is it depends. It's going to depend on what you're able to get from rents. I know just a couple of years ago, farm prices for land were very, very high. That's moderated here a little bit. We've had a few farmers, or at least families, who've had some property, and they've gotten pretty decent rents on a regular basis as they rent out that farmland to somebody that's actually going to be tending the crops. And it's going to depend on your relationship with that farmer and what they're willing to do and how long that relationship can go. But we've seen it where it has done very well for some of those people over a 10 or 15 year span, where the farmer is very happy to be able to farm the land, not have to worry about owning the land, because that requires additional capital on their part. But they are able to then get some rents off of that. And it's an addition rent as opposed to this is my primary source of income.
Yeah. All right. 217, thank you for the text this morning, Paul. And thank you for coming in and spending the whole hour with us and answering some questions. What if people after the show want to get in touch with you and have a one-on-one?
We can answer all kinds of questions. And email is probably the best way to do it. And it's pnolte@kingsviewam.com. And we can continue the conversation right there.
All right, very good. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, where he's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures each up about 0.25% to 1/3 this morning. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson this morning to talk a little bit more about agriculture and commodities. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you. An interesting meeting at the USDA yesterday as Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue brought together in the office the secretary during the Reagan administration, John Block, who is from Illinois, and also Dan Glickman, and Tom Vilsack, the former Secretaries of Agriculture, joined the secretary at the USDA headquarters to say, we need a strong and reliable trade deal with our top two customers for U.S. agriculture products. And the USMCA, I call it NAFTA 2, will provide certainty in the North American market for agriculture products, will provide certainty for the U.S. farm sector and the rural economy, and we strongly support ratification. And following the announcement, they released the press statement with former secretaries of agriculture going all the way back to Mike Johanns, Ann Veneman, Mike Espy, and Ed Schaefer, all signing on to the call to Congress to get that approval so that we can sign the new Canada-Mexico-U.S. trade agreement.
I also saw yesterday, speaking of Sonny Perdue, his office released a note saying that next week a Chinese delegation is going to visit some farms in the U.S. to see production firsthand. That seems like a positive thing. Anytime the Chinese are working constructively with us?
Well, I think it's a good move to get the Chinese delegation that is involved directly in trade and the need for the products. And when you can get them into the United States, that gives U.S. farmers an opportunity to show them around. It's interesting because this week, a goodwill mission from Taiwan, an annual event that's, I've participated in two or three of them over the last two decades. But every year, Taiwan has sent a delegation of U.S. Chinese from that island nation to the United States to visit farms, to talk to farmers and traders about buying. And they did sign an agreement to buy quite a bit U.S. farm products. But Taiwan is a much smaller nation than China, and of course China says, no, it's part of us, so that agreement has not been finished yet. Do want to mention also that National Cattlemen's Beef Association has new leadership. Two significant leadership changes were announced yesterday. And the first one, Colin Woodall, will serve as the Cattlemen's new chief executive officer. He was named Wednesday, September 18th, after an exhausting national search, managed NCBA's efforts in Washington, D.C. for more than a decade. We've interviewed Colin many times, very knowledgeable on the political world in Washington and the impact on cattlemen. So want to congratulate him and welcome him to the leadership of the NCBA. Just a quick look at the grain market overnight. Not much change. Wheat is up 2¾ cents. Corn is up just a quarter of a cent. And soybeans trading down a penny a bushel. So not much change in what we see in the marketplace, despite the fact that China has purchased a fair amount of U.S. soybeans this past week.
All right. Orion, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Same to you, my friend.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. Make sure you tune into the morning show tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN at 5 o'clock with Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, September 20th. Not a lot on the schedule today. A few things moving, though. Apple's iPhone 11 goes on sale in select markets. Nearly 50,000 GM workers are still on strike. We'll also be watching more of the fallout from the Federal Reserve on interest rates this week. And in the repo markets, some of the things that could move the markets on Friday, September the 20th.